Tonight, Mr. Burgess Meredith stars in Sometime Every Summertime from Studio One at CBS.
She was one of the most beautiful women I've ever known. She wasn't a woman, really, a girl. And I only knew her a little more than 2 weeks. But sometime every summer since then, I've thought of her.
We invite you to Studio One, radio's celebrated playhouse of dramatic entertainment. For this week only, Studio One will be a half-hour program, the second part of our usual hour being relinquished for a special broadcast. Tonight, we submit an original radio play by our producer-director, Fletcher Markle. And now to introduce tonight's story and star, here is Mr. Markle.
Sometime Every Summertime is the story of a vacation romance and the separate ways in which three people remembered it. It's a quiet story, a summertime memory, and we hope you can relax and enjoy it. Starring tonight as Clem Waldron in Sometime Every Summertime, we have with us in Studio One a most renowned favorite of Hollywood and Broadway, Mr. Burgess Meredith. And with Mr. Meredith, you'll be hearing a young actress whose performances at the microphone are all too infrequent, but who make up for this by being one of radio's busiest and most skillful writers, Miss Patricia Jowdery. Miss Jowdery plays Mary tonight with Robert Dryden as McFedries, who tells the first part of the story. Please to begin.
It was one of those unimportant affairs that you associate with a certain time of your life, a certain season, and a certain place. Unimportant, but the kind of thing that sticks in your memory. Whenever something turns up to remind you of that time, and that season, and that place, you remember it. There were three of us that summer. Charlie Hayes, myself, and Clem Waldron. It was a warm August before the war, and all we wanted was 2 weeks of a good time. Going up to the island on the boat, standing at the rail, Charlie said,
I want to die. I want to sit in the sun and sweat and die. For 2 weeks, brothers, all I want to do is die.
That'll last about one day. Hey, look at the sloop.
Trim.
Very.
Why don't we hurry up and get there? I hate boats.
Not long now, Clem. That's the island over there, the other side of us. To port.
Starboard.
All right, starboard. The bay is just around the corner.
Is it? Good.
Oh, corner.
All right, all right. In a minute, she'll blow. She did. All right, let's collect our stuff. Your turn to carry the beer, Waldron.
If we're here, I'll carry anything.
In half an hour, I'll be sitting in the sun on the porch of our little cottage, prepared to die.
It was that kind of summer, and we were feeling that kind of crazy. The island was one of those little islands about 2 hours' run from Vancouver, a resort, a vacation community, alive less than 6 months of the year. There were a lot of ordinary summer houses sloping up from a pocket harbor at the southern end of the island, and a lot of unbelievably wonderful summer girls wearing very little more than their suntans. The three of us worked in an advertising agency. We got 3 weeks' vacation every year, two in July or August, one at Christmas. Charlie and I had always gone off someplace for those weeks and pretended we hated the advertising racket and acted like the foolish bachelors that we surely were. That summer was Waldron's first vacation since joining the agency. We asked him along because we'd lunched and partied together a few times in town. He was a nice guy and didn't know many people in Vancouver. After we'd cleaned out the cottage and had some supper, we sat on the porch and smoked. It was about 10 o'clock and fully dark, and Charlie said,
I like the cottage we had last year, Billy.
Why? This place, all right.
Last year's had screens on the screen doors.
Oh, we can fix that. One at the back's the only bad one.
Where are we from the place you had last year?
Well, not far. Around the other side of the bluffs. Cottages here are all the same. Operated by a syndicate. Rent's the same. Dirt's the same.
Ah, female merriment. That sounds interesting.
Next door, is it?
No, it's in the cabin ahead to the left of us on the edge of the bluffs. There's three of them, and they're alone.
Well, how neat. And when did you get this encyclopedic information, Waldron?
Before supper, when I went out for cigarettes.
And you didn't think it'd make worthwhile conversation at table?
I forgot about it.
Oh, are they that bad?
I've only seen one of them. She was hanging out washing. We talked for a minute.
Oh, a domestic tableau. What'd she look like?
How old was she?
Wolves. Well, she's quite plain, as a matter of fact. Not unattractive. 25, 26.
What do you talk about?
The island, weather, vacations, neighbors.
Oh, that's more like it. How long have they been?
Came yesterday.
Shall we take our chances?
We will. Where's the flashlight?
On the ledge.
I got it.
Go ahead.
Well, what's the matter with you? Sitting there mumping on that pipe. One of the others might be more attractive.
I came up here to relax, Charlie.
Oh, for Pete's sake, Waldron.
Go ahead. Don't let me stop you.
You cooperate, though, won't you, Cap?
Sure, Mac. I'll talk to one of them.
Oh, that's better. It may not even turn out, you know.
Go ahead.
Do your stuff, Charlie. If they don't look intelligent, don't feel badly about coming back alone.
Oh, you know me, Mac. I'm a trustworthy guy. Get out your prayers.
Charlie disappeared in the darkness, and we watched his flashlight swing along the path to the cottage on the bluffs. We heard him knock on their door, and the door opened with a splash of light. Charlie talked and laughed with them for a few minutes, and then we saw them all coming out the front door, and the door closed. It was dark again. There was only Charlie's flashlight coming along the path, leading the way.
Hey, let's have some light on the porch.
Better light the lamp, Mac.
Lamp? Oh, lamp. Sure. You got a match?
They're on the table there.
Okay, I got it. I hope Charlie wasn't too hasty.
Three lonely men and three lonely women not knowing each other. Now, that sort of thing must be intended to you, though. Ah, glow of welcome. Now, let me see if I can get all the names straight. Fran, This is Clem Wall, and Mac McFedris. Fran Howard.
How'd you do?
Hi.
And Helen. What's your last name again?
Rowley,
that's it. Clem Waldron, Helen.
We met at supper time. Hello.
Hello. Your washing all finished?
All right, Waldron. Let me get the formalities over with. And Mac McFedris, Helen Rowley.
Hello.
Call me Mac.
And where's...
Mary. Well, don't hide. Oh, come on, Mary.
Oh, there you are. Mary Thomas. It is Thomas, isn't it?
Mary's kind of shy. She likes to just nod her head.
Mary, Mac McFedris.
Hello, Mary.
And Clem Waldron.
Hello, Mary.
Yes. Well, let's sit down, shall we? Mac, any refreshment?
Yeah.
Oh, I good idea. Ready,
just ready.
I'd love one. Thank you.
Mary was an Italian girl, two generations removed from the old land. And the Thomas was for Tomasino, a grandfather's gesture to citizenship in his adopted home. She was slim and dark and quiet, very beautiful, very real. Waldron reacted to her like a hit on the head the moment she stepped out of the shadows into the lamplight on the porch that night. I won't say it was love at first sight, though Waldron always insisted it was exactly that. I think it was just a sharp awareness of a bachelor's loneliness, and the sudden shock of finding unexpected beauty as a neighbor in a summer place like the island. Not much more. Mary and Helen were elevator operators in a Vancouver department store, and Fran, the third girl, was a waitress. Helen was only plain, according to Clem, but we got along fine. Fran and Charlie hit it off, too. Both Charlie and I leaned pretty heavily on that easy intimacy that goes with romps on the beach, the shared preparation of meals, and warm summer nights with nothing in your mind but the weight of the stars. At first, it looked like a good holiday. Beginning the next morning, after a long night sitting out on the porch, getting to know each other, we talked back and forth as if we were all living in the same cottage, ignoring the 100 yards that separated us.
Charlie, you going down to the beach?
It's Fran.
I'm ready whenever you are. Now?
About 2 minutes.
Right.
You're going down, Matt?
Sure, Helen.
Better get into your trunks.
I'll be just a shake getting changed. We'll pick you up.
Okay.
Where's Waldron?
What do you think? He and Mary went down an hour ago.
I wondered where... Oh, it's going to be like that, huh?
Looks like it. Will you keep me company, Mac, old friend?
I'll keep you company. Waldron and Mary kept their own hours, had their own meals, at the hotel, or a box lunch at the beach, or out in a rented boat, and the four of us were left to ourselves. We kidded Waldron about it every night, and Waldron said,
I'm in love.
He said it often, but he said it as if he were trying to convince himself.
I'm in love. I love that girl.
It was embarrassing, even for Charlie and me, who knew him pretty well. And Helen and Fran told us that Mary didn't say anything much about it at night when the girls went to bed. Just told them that Waldron had told her he was in love with her and gave them no indication whatsoever of her own feelings. All six of us seldom got together. Whenever we saw Waldron and Mary at the beach or sitting out in the bluffs at night, it was like seeing a couple of strangers. Charlie and I always thought of Waldron's painful words.
I'm in love. I love that girl.
Mary stayed over an extra day, and the four of us went back together. I think Waldron took her out a few times in town, but we didn't hear much about it from him. He was transferred to another office of the agency about a month later, and we weren't really close enough friends to correspond. The whole business was pretty trivial, I guess, but I often remember it whenever I see a girl that looks Mary. You know, that olive skin, that exotic thing about pretty girls of the Latin type. Or when I go to a place like the island for a holiday. Or just happen to think about people you meet in the summertime. It was one of those things.
Hello, Mary.
Hello, Mary, he said when we were first introduced. Only in a funny way, like he knew me before, was scared of me or something. It was at a summer camp I went to one year with Helen Rowley and Franny Howard. We took a cottage at the camp, the three of us, putting all our vacation money together to pay the rent and have enough for food for the 2 weeks and everything. It was a lovely cottage, overlooked a lovely bay at the camp. And the three boys were in another cottage just back of us. Clem, I mean, and his friends. Clem talked to Helen one night while she was hanging washing. And then one of Clem's friends, I forget his name, come over later and talked to all of us and asked us to come and be sociable with our neighbors. And we all went. That was when I met Clem, when we all went over to their place. And he spoke to me in that funny way. Clem was very nice to me and talked to me a lot more, and he talked to Helen or Franny, and we had a lovely time. Next day, Clem took me to the beach and out to lunch at the hotel and then out in a boat he rented for the afternoon, and then all again for supper. That night we got cushions and a rug and went and sat in the bluffs a little ways down below the front of our cottage and looked down at the bay and the boats that were always there. It was a lovely evening, and Clem was very nice. Clem was always very nice to me. I can remember almost everything he said.
How old are you, Mary?
Guess.
I could, but I think I'd be wrong.
Try.
No, I'm sure I'd be wrong.
Oh, go on. Guess.
22, am I right?
Yes.
Oh, I spoiled it. I had to go and guess it correctly. Did you want me to think you were older?
No.
Younger?
No.
Well, what then?
I guess I just didn't want you to guess right, that's all. It's no fun when somebody guesses right.
Yeah, I know. Well, I was going to say 23. I almost said 23.
Did you?
You're very, very beautiful, Mary.
Oh, you.
So brown. Where'd you get all that sun?
Well, that isn't just sun.
Oh, of course not. I forgot. What's the Thomas for?
Tomasino.
That's your real name?
Thomas is my real name now. Tomasino was my grandfather's name at home.
Were you born here?
Oh, yes.
In Vancouver?
Yes.
Why didn't I ever meet you before?
There's a lot of people in Vancouver. A lot of girls. I bet you know a lot of girls in Vancouver, Clem.
No, not many. None at all like you.
Oh, you.
Is that you down there, Mary?
Yes?
Are you all right?
Yes?
Okay.
Helen and Franny, always worrying.
How many are in your family?
A lot.
Well, how many?
Seven.
Well, that's not really many.
You hear them.
Brothers and sisters?
Five brothers, one sister. So noisy.
Your sister?
All of them.
Do they tease you much?
George. George does. And Nina.
Is your sister older or younger than you are?
Oh, younger. I'm the oldest of them all.
Ah. I'd have thought you were the youngest.
Me? You kidding?
No, I would have thought that.
Oh, it's lovely out here. Moon. When I come out on the porch this morning early, moon was still out.
Was it?
How old are you, Clem? How... Oh, please. Please don't...
Mary.
You shouldn't do that.
Why not?
I don't know you. I don't know you hardly at all. You shouldn't do that if...
Know me? Look, I'm 29 years old. I was born in Grand Forks, British Columbia. Went to school, Vancouver, University. I got brother and two sisters. I work in advertising. I'm unmarried, unattached, unhappy, and I think you'll... Kiss me again.
Clem, no.
Mary.
Yes. You're bad. Clem wasn't really bad. Even though after a few days he started to look at me more and more in that funny way he looked at me when we were first introduced. I seen other boys look at me that way, and I never liked it. But when Clem looked at me like that, it seemed all right, because Clem was such a fine person. He took me everywhere on the island, and at the end of a week, there wasn't a place left we didn't go to. We just lay on the beach after that and went to the hotel for lunch and sat out in the bluffs at night after dancing. Clem told me he loved me one night and asked me if I loved him. And I couldn't tell him if I did or not because I didn't know. And when I told Helen and Franny that Clem said he loved me, they asked me how I felt, and I couldn't tell them either, one way or the other. I just didn't know. Summertime fools a girl about love, you know. Second to last night at the camp, we went down to the wharf and sat at the end and dropped matches in the water below us until very late.
That must be a radio on one of the boats out there.
It's lovely.
Why don't we dance?
Dance? Here on the wharf?
Why not? Come on. Up you get.
Oh, Clem, the matches and your cigarettes. The whole package went over. Have you got any more?
No, it doesn't matter. Come on.
But it's rough on the planks.
Pick up your feet.
Oh, Clem, I can't.
Of course you can.
Oh.
Oh. Sorry, darling. Don't you know that step?
No, I...
Look down. Now watch my feet.
I don't know that one. It's hard to hear the music now, isn't it?
It's the wind.
Please, Clem, let's stop. Let's just sit.
All right.
Give me your hand while I get down.
Watch yourself.
There. What are you doing?
Your wonderful hair feels like so soft.
Oh, you. It's just old hair.
Oh, no. No, it isn't.
Careful.
Ah, it's all right. Give me your hand. It's a beautiful hand.
Dirty. These planks.
A ring would look wonderful on that finger.
Clem, you shouldn't say that.
Say what?
You shouldn't say that about rings. You shouldn't ever say things like that unless you mean it.
Well, I mean it.
No.
Yes, I do.
Clem, please.
Would you... marry me if I asked you to?
Oh, no, Clem, you mustn't say that.
Why? I'm...
No. It don't seem right when...
When?
When that's not what you want. That's not what you want, Clem.
I want you.
Yes. It's not the same.
Mary.
No, Clem.
All right. Wish I had a cigarette.
I stayed over at the camp an extra day. I had an extra day on from a day I worked at Christmas and went back to the city with Clem and his friends. It was a lovely trip, and Clem made me promise to let him take me out the next night. He had a car, but it was being fixed while he was on his holiday. He wanted to take me home in a taxi from the boat, but I didn't want him to. I didn't want him to come out before I could tell about him to Mama and Papa. Mama was happy when I told him, but Papa was angry because he always said he had to look at a boy before I went out with him. And I was glad that I didn't say nothing, like that Clem said he loved me or that he wanted to marry me. Next night, Clem come around for me about 8. I wasn't ready, so he talked to Papa and George. I don't think they got along, because when we went out, he acted as if he was mad about something. I had on my white suit, just cleaned, and we went dancing. But Clem said it was too crowded and he was tired, so we left and went to a show. When he took me home, he said something about calling me, and we'd go dancing or something like that where it wasn't so crowded. But I didn't hear from him again. I guess he was too busy. That was 4 or 5 years ago. But every year since, when I've gone to a camp and met other boys, I think of Clem. Even last year, after I was married, when Rico and me had the same cottage as Helen and Franny and me had that summer, I thought of him. I really think of him quite a lot. That funny way he looked at me when we were first introduced. Rico never looks at me that way.
Hello, Mary. She was one of the most beautiful women I've ever known. She wasn't a woman, really. Girl, beautiful animal, wonderful gesture of nature. She was Italian, Canadian born, and we met at a summer place, a West Coast Island resort I went to 1 year with McFedries and Hayes when I was in the Vancouver office. I only knew her a little more than 2 weeks, but sometime every summer since then, I've thought of her. In all honesty, I don't know how I felt about her. I think at first I was in love with her. At one point, I even considered marrying her. Whatever it was, I wanted her, and it was like a fever. It wasn't normal. It was very foolish and untidy, and I went about it like a schoolboy. And I remember overhearing McFedries and Hayes talking about it one night. They were out on the porch and hadn't heard me come in the back door.
He says he's in love with her.
That could mean any one of a dozen things.
Sure. Not the way he says it.
I don't know why he says it at all. He keeps saying it. That's the thing that confuses me. Keeps insisting on it.
That's not like Waldron.
Well, she is beautiful, Mac.
I'll give you that, sure, but hardly Waldron's type.
What do you mean by that?
An elevator operator. Maybe only a year of high school. Maybe not in that.
If you say poor but honest, I'll leave this conversation.
Okay. Do you know what I mean? At least you know Waldron.
Well, superficially. But I suppose you're right.
I don't know. What is it they say about summer romances?
I couldn't tell you.
Oh, you could make it up, I guess, for all that matters. Pretty obvious example with Waldron, I think.
I was too annoyed to walk in on that conversation. I suppose I didn't particularly want them to know I'd been listening. Nobody likes that kind of thing. And that was the night that I asked her to marry me. She refused, of course, and was very embarrassed with my asking. I must have sounded pretty hollow now that I think back on it. I felt something big and important inside me, and I made a mistake about it. I think it was simply a case of not being aware of that nice difference between love and desire. But she knew. Nevertheless, we had an exciting 2 weeks. Exciting for me, anyway. She was a thrilling kind of a girl. When she wasn't in her bathing suit, she wore bright blouses and slacks. And she was one of the few women I've ever known who looked well in slacks. A lot of women must have hated her for her loveliness. I think I hated her a little myself. She wasn't mine. When we went back to town, we took the late evening boat, and the moonlight at sea helped to stretch out the last few hours of the holiday. It was another world to me, and I was afraid to leave it. She wanted to go home alone, refusing to let me take her out in a taxi, so I got her address and made arrangements to call for her the following night. It was an address in the far east side of the city, and when I drove out in my car the next night, I had trouble finding it. It was a narrow, two-story house between a confectionery and a metal workshop. It was still daylight, no lights on, and you wouldn't have thought anybody could live there. I went loudly up the steps of the low porch to the door, trying to trample down with my feet the thoughts that were running in my head.
Hiya.
Oh, good evening. Is,
You Mr. Walden?
Yes, is this,
I'm George. We saw your car pull up. She just shouted down that you'd only be a minute. Come on in.
I thank you.
And he'll be okay.
Good evening, George. Beat it.
Are you Mr.
Sit down, Mr. Waldron. Excuse us the supper dishes. Mama took the children to the movie theater early.
I seen the picture. It's lousy.
Shut up. Nice to see you, Mr. Waldron. I don't think she'll be so long. Girls, you know.
That's perfectly all right. Lots of time.
What business you in, Mr. Waldron?
A business? I'm a advertising agency here, Everett Fuller.
I'm in the grocery business myself. You happen to notice my store down the next block?
It's in, next door here?
No, that's old Winsky. I'm down the next block.
No, I didn't notice it. No.
Oh, what are you doing, the advertising agency business, Mr. Walden? Billboards and all like that?
Yeah, all like that.
Uh-huh. Business good?
Yeah, pretty good.
We're doing good, too. Oh, yes.
Here she is. All got up. All got up to go places. Gee, don't she smell good?
Now, this time she was wearing a white cotton suit that had been laundered too often and was too small for her. And her hair was done up in a sort of a braid wound around her head, and she wasn't the same girl at all. We went dancing. It wasn't any good. We didn't dance the same way. Then we went to a late movie and then coffee to drive in and out to her house. None of it was the same. None of it was any good. I told her I'd phone her and drove back to my apartment the long way. And I got word that I was to be transferred a couple of days later, and I didn't call her. I couldn't. It's very difficult for a man to get over realizing that he's a snob. Funny, it was so important, and yet I can't even remember her name.
Celebrated Playhouse, Studio One, you have just heard Mr. Burgess Meredith starring in Fletcher Markle's production of his own original radio play, Sometime Every Summertime. For this week only, Studio One has been heard as a half-hour program, the second part of our usual hour being relinquished for a special broadcast. Tonight's script was selected from the current volume of Radio's Best Plays, edited by Joseph Liss, and the original musical score was composed by Lana Domian and conducted by Alexander Semler. Now again, Mr. Markle.
May a producer identify the principals in tonight's cast. In the foreground,
Clem Waldron.
Was played, of course, by Mr. Meredith.
Mary Thomas.
Was played by Patricia Jowdery.
McFedries.
Was Robert Dryden.
Charlie Hayes.
Was Hedley Rennie.
George.
Was Larry Robinson.
Papa Thomas.
Was played by Martin Wolfson. Actively assisting in the supporting cast were Miriam Wolfe, Tony Darnay, and Louis Quinn. Burgess Meredith will soon be seen starring in the London film production, Mine Own Executioner. Next week from Studio One, a special play to welcome the first day of spring. It's the story of a boy and girl who discover that the world still holds enchantment for the pure in heart. Our play is One More Spring by Robert Nathan, and our visiting star is one of Hollywood's most entrancing young actresses, Miss Susan Peters. We hope you'll be with us. Meantime, we'd like very much to hear from you about the kind of stories you'd like us to present in future programs on Studio One. We've chosen our stories in the past months with every intention of pleasing, and we'd like to know from you if we've succeeded, what particular plays and performers you'd like to hear in weeks to come. If you have a moment and a postcard, please let us know. And now until next week, until one more spring with Susan Peters, this is Fletcher Markle with a good night and thank you from all of us in Studio One.
This is Lee Vines, and this is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.